This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or a grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. This is the RotoWire MMA podcast. I am not the Daily Fantasy Sniper. I'm Mike Alexander filling in this week for Sean, keeping his seat warm. With me, as usual, we got Joe Sun Tzu. What's going on, Joe?
How you doing, Mike? Thanks for I love the wallpaper that you got going on there. It's like very professional, especially for a
green screen technology.
Short notice replacement. Uh-huh. Man, I was worried that you weren't going to make weight, but it's all good.
I definitely would not make weight at the moment. just buy a green bed sheet. That's all you need. It's very easy. And then Chris Olson, what's going on, Chris?
Hey man, yeah, I was talking to Mike before we logged on. I said, like, how is it possible that he is the most professional one that we've ever had? Quite frankly, I mean, no disrespect to Sean, but he's never come with stuff like this.
And so, by the way, Mike is the architect of the Dynasty draft that was so successful that you offered a second iteration up, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there was enough interest that we filled we did a 14 team league and two less fighters. So it's interesting to see. This is the first year, so there's probably a hiccup or two that's going to get worked out, but so far things are going smoothly. You know, a lot of people were active in the early going with ads, but this is my spouse especially, like, I process the ads manually, so I always like feel the need to put a bid in, but I'm burning through my ads really fast. We only get 20 ads per half if you guys aren't sure what I'm talking about.
I'm playing my team, man. I got Felicia Spencer. I was real happy. You know, yeah. I'm playing my team, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to make a few more ads, I think. And
I do.
You'll get some nice discounts coming into the May and June period. So you've got them saved up.
I think I have, unfortunately, I think I have Deron Wynn. I bought him for like $100. I think he's going to lose pretty handily. So, but you know, yeah. I'm going to ride with him. So
it's been interesting to look at the team you put together. You know, we did this a little bit after Thanksgiving so that we had them built for the new year.
Yeah.
And you know, you felt so good about certain things, and now you're like, wait, why did I spend that much money on this guy?
Yeah.
That's the fun of a dynasty league.
Yeah.
But yeah, quick note from our sponsor, RotoWire. You can get a 10-day free trial for all the premium content. No credit card required. It's one of the things I love about RotoWire's trial. It's a legitimate free trial. It's not one of those fake, we're going to charge you free trials. And then if you're listening to the stream here, you can do it. You can catch it as a podcast as well on YouTube and anywhere you find your podcasts. But yeah, so appreciate you guys having me. And any notes from last week you guys want to hit before we jump into UFC 248?
Not really. I mean, aside from the general weirdness, that was that card, I guess not really. I mean, you know, just how many lineups got absolutely burned to a crisp when, Kutalaba was doing, I still, you know, maybe we can put a poll out or something, because I still haven't decided what he was doing, whether he was legitimately hurt or whether he was acting. I can't figure it out, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the minority.
I actually had Kutalaba. I had a really weird cash hybrid lineup where, you know, I had Kutalaba in it, and everything was kind of rolling along pretty nicely. And, you know, he was kind of my wild card in that lineup. He just kind of fit from a lineup construction perspective. I also had Brendan Allen in there, and you know, yeah, I love to see him score 2.5 points. That really kind of made my day, you know.
But so what's your opinion, Joe? Was he Was he rope-a-doping everyone?
I happen to like that referee. I think he's been one of the more steady refs in the UFC, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I know there are people that are screaming, short stoppage, but I mean, he really looked like he was dopey. I mean, and not in a rope-a-dope way, like just like legitimately dopey. I don't know. Like, I'm not going to blame the referee. He should have said something. Like, he should have. I guess you don't want to give it up either. I mean, I could certainly see both sides. I don't know. I'm not going to blame McDonald for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, my point, and I was in the minority and took some heat for it, but it's Cutelaba partly to blame. You know, you can't pretend you're getting knocked out while a light heavyweight is throwing a barrage that strikes at you and expect the referee to do nothing. Like, yes, it was very quick and probably should have been given more time, but like, don't use that strategy 25 seconds into your fight. That's just, that's bad. And I have no use for Cutelaba to begin with. So, we'll see what happens in the rematch.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. We got a lot of rematch information today. Not only that, but also, you know, Benavidez and,
just run the whole card back.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
All right, let's kick off with the first fight of the night. We've got Zan Abogadirol, 8,200 on DraftKings, minus 135, taking on Guido Canetti, 8K even. And his odds are coming in at plus 115. I'll kick it off with you, Chris. What do you got on this one?
I'm actually in the minority here, I think, pretty handily, but I actually like Canetti a little bit as a fighter. I think that I like that he is sort of all action going forward. I like that he can do a little bit of everything. You know, he has some decent trips from the clinch. He's sort of an opportunistic back taker. He can throw some good leg kicks. His defense isn't all that great, which is what we've seen before, but you know, my problem with Baccarat is just that, even in his regional fights, he just sort of stands and waits on his opponents a little bit too much for me. And a guy like Alatang, who came into that fight as the wrestler, was just hitting him with overhand after overhand, you know, no real disguise, just sort of really busting him up. And like, I have no doubt that Baccarat is the better technical kickboxer than a guy like Guido Canetti. I just don't know if the waiting on the opponent and not letting his hands go enough. And he has some good kicks, but you never really see him. I mean, you saw three or four in that Alatang fight, and you don't really see a ton on the regional scene either. And that's not even getting into the fact that, you know, Canetti is, whatever you want to say about him in general, the more complete martial artist here. So I think I'm taking Guido Canetti here, just because I like him to outwork Baccarat, and I think he is the more well-rounded fighter. So yeah, I'm going Guido Canetti.
Yeah, you're definitely gonna probably get some nice ownership on him from that standpoint. I don't think many people are jumping up to roster him, and it's the coin flip fight. So if you get it right, that's gonna be a key part of a lineup. And you know, he does swing from the hip, so there's always that. Which way are you going on this one, Joe?
Well, all I can say is what a difference a week makes. I mean, you know, last week we had the curtain jerker was a fight with two really solid prospects that, you know, no way should have been buried that far deep in the prelims with Nuriev and Sanders. And this week we get 40-year-old Guido Canetti, and as Paul Shaughnessy says, you can't spell Canetti without can. Yep. And this guy from Mongolia. Look, Canetti will go as hard and fast as he can until he gasses out. Can he catch? I think the Mongolian fighter is tough enough to sustain that, to last that. I don't know that this is going to be any great guns for DraftKings unless Canetti does in fact catch him in that, you know, 7.5 minutes that he's going to go full out. I'm going to go the other way from Chris to win the fight in a relatively low scoring decision, but I guess for GPPs, you maybe want to have a few shares, in case, you know, Canetti either catches him in the first 7.5 minutes or he totally gasses out, and gets, you know, pinned and submitted by the Mongolian fighter.
Right. I'm usually pretty heavy on this fight on both sides, through lineups, but you do kind of get the sense that if Canetti doesn't pull it off early, it's probably just going to be a little bit of a wrestle box fest for Becquerel and not the best DK score.
Yeah.
But I would pick him to win the fight as well. Moving on, we got Giga Chigadze, 7,700 on DraftKings, plus 150. Taking on Jamal Emmers, 8,500 and minus 170. Joe, kick it off with you. You lean in Emmers' way.
Yeah. I mean, look, fight IQ aside, I mean, this is Emmers' fight to lose. Giga was taken down three times by Brandon Davis. You know, Giga is a kickboxer and he's without power, which is kind of interesting. He does have a good body kick. To me, Emmers is the prospect here. He's more athletic. He does have a wrestling base. He should be able to look, if Davis could get three takedowns, you know, there should be a pretty high ceiling for Emmers. I think he could be a relatively sneaky low owned play with all the focus on the top. I do kind of like Emmers here. It's not without risk. I mean, you know, Juicy J, that was not a good look on Emmers. But he does, other than that, that was kind of his big hiccup. So give me Emmers here by finish.
Yeah, you know, he got head kicked. I guess that's, you know, that can happen to anybody. But, you know, on Giga, like, if you're going to have a kick named after you, like, you better be a pretty good fighter. So, you know, the Giga kick or whatever, like, I don't know. That just kind of turns me off of him that he's not, he hasn't had a better MMA career. Chris, any love for the other side? Are you on Emmers as well?
No, I actually have complete love for the other side because not only am I picking him to win the fight, but in my betting preview article that is on rotowire.com right now, in fact, I picked Giga to win this fight as the small dog. Look, everything that, well, most things, I won't say everything, but I agree with most of what Joe said as far as the concerns. He did get taken down three times by Brandon Davis. But he showed a good propensity to getting his back to the fence and working his way up every time he got taken down. He also showed better takedown defense as the fight wore on. Now you can say Brandon Davis was getting tired, but be as it may, in the third round we were seeing him do things like dig for underhooks and trying to break Davis's posture. So I think that and also anecdotally, there was on the broadcast they were talking about you know, that he enters wrestling and grappling competition. So this is a guy who I think is trying to get better, knows where he's weak in the MMA game, is trying to round himself out. And not only is trying to do that, but showed some signs of doing it in his last fight. He's got a good camp behind him in Kings MMA. And as far as Emmers, I agree with Joe, like he is the more athletic guy for sure, but he's also a pretty sloppy striker. I think he has a problem with range where he sort of tends to smother his punches a little bit and kicks. And I also think he gets wild at times that can leave openings. We've seen him just go full out wrestling in his amateur career before when he's had to. So, I mean, that is a concern for sure. But I think that, I mean, what I wrote, and I'll say it again here, I mean, essentially what I'm doing is a bit of a hunch play. I'm betting that, the improvements that I've seen him make in the octagon, or the knowledge that I saw him have of not only takedown defense, but what to do when being taken down in the octagon, is going to result in some more technique 6 months later. I think he's going to be improved here. And I think if he's improved there, and it doesn't even have to be that much of an improvement, I think he's such the better striker that I think he can wash it out. So yeah, my pick is Giga and possibly by finish.
Well, you're building quite the GPP lineup, Chris. So far, I'm projecting your total ownership under 20%.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I was the dog guy when we first got into this. I moved away from that a little bit, but I'm coming back to my roots. So
yeah, I'm going to go Emmers here. Bet on the wrestler. That's
okay.
Yeah, you know, one guy's got a wrestling deficiency, and the other guy is that's his base. It just is going to work out that way, probably 9 times out of 10 for me. But you know, I do see your side that there is some liabilities there if he can't get his wrestling going for any reason. Next fight, we've got Emily Spitfire Whitmire, 8,100, and on DraftKings and plus 100 at the book. Pollyanna Viana, 8,100 and minus 120. So, Chris, is it going to be frustrating submission grappler loses by submission, or frustrating submission grappler loses by submission?
Let me think about that. That's actually a very good frame for this fight. But, I think that, look, Pollyanna Viana has, I think, what, lost three in a row now. So yep. It's easy to be down on her. I actually think, and this might sound weird in a matchup against with two fighters who you can't really trust either of them, I actually think Pollyanna Viana is the way better fighter of these two fighters. I think that Emily Whitmire is, look, she's very, very stiff on the feet. She ends up throwing a lot of, like, rapid combination punches, which I think are meant to scare the opponent more than anything because they don't land very often. And even if they do, they don't have much force behind them. Now, Viana, I mean, she's not a great striker either, but at least she's got a plan on the feet. She likes to keep her range and fire those hard body kicks. And she's going to have, I think, a 4-inch reach advantage here. So she should be able to do that pretty well. As far as the grappling goes, look, Emily, they're both grapplers, as you said. But Emily Whitmire, three or four of her losses have come by submission. Yes, Viana got subbed by Macedo in her last fight. But look, Macedo, the one thing, maybe the one defining skill that Macedo even has is working off her back. So I can forgive that a little bit. Like, she's tricky, she's flexible. Viana got caught. Okay, whatever. I don't think that Whitmire is that kind of opportunistic submission grappler from her back. We just saw her get dominated by Amanda Ribas in a fight. In the submission after getting taken down, and Viana's got good trips from the clinch and good clinch takedowns. So I think this is Pollyanna Viana's fight to lose, and it's kind of hard for me to see how she loses it, quite honestly. So my pick is going to be Viana. Yeah.
All right, Joe, are we going to make it 3-for-3 splitting from Chris?
Oh, my gosh, where to start? I mean, I got to just check my timestamp to see if this was a 420 pod. Oh, my God, a very, very much better fighter. Let me see.
A way more composed fighter.
Pollyanna Viana, a world-class, accomplished Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, gets submitted in 90 seconds by an undersized brown belt. Okay, like
wait. Come on, Joe. I'm coming back in here. You're gonna tell me it's weird that a brown belt submitted a black belt? That's not that weird. That happened.
Undersized Veronica Macedo submitted a world class Brazilian Jiu Jitsu black belt, quote unquote, in 90 seconds. Yeah, it's weird. Okay,
you should go on Reddit sometime and listen to the horror stories of like our like black belts. Like oh my God.
It can happen, but it shouldn't have happened. Okay, so let's cast that aside for a minute. Okay, shout out to Magic Mike. Modelo just did a 5-minute ad on Emily Whitmire. Do you think Modelo would invest the time and money in Emily Whitmire if they thought she was going to lose against Pollyanna Viana? No.
That's weird.
So we got the Modelo thing going. We got the fact that Viana got submitted by a brown belt in 90 seconds. Look. I don't love this fight either. I mean, would it surprise me if Viana won? No. I do like some changes in all seriousness that Whitmire made, bouncing around to a couple different camps to see what she could, pull out from each camp. She's had some mental issues in the past that, again, she seems to have gotten over. I guess proof will tell. We will see what happens here. My lean is... it's actually a little bit more than a lean, given the narrative, is for Emily Whitmire. I don't know that this is going to be a great fight for DraftKings. I mean, it could be one of those sneaky fights where something happens and a lot of points get scored. But on the surface, I could kind of see a grindy, low-scoring decision fight, split decision type of fight. But give me Emily Whitmire here.
Yeah, if the grappling were to nullify each other a little bit, that could be a problem as far as DraftKings points. Yeah. For me, I just don't know where to be with Whitmire because, we were kind of lukewarm on her coming into the Albu fight, and she looks great. And, You know, Rebus, I guess, you know, we should have given her a little more credit, I think, as a crowd. But I feel like people were just expecting Whitmire to have a similar performance again. And, you know, definitely was not the case. So, but, you know, Rebus is a pretty good fighter, as it seems. You know, so I just don't, that win and loss just really doesn't leave Whitmire anywhere in my eyes that I can accurately forecast. So I'm thinking I'm going to lean her way, given that that unknown is a little more than Viana, where it seems like we know she's just not a good MMA fighter at this point. So give me Whitmire.
Well, I just want to push back on one thing. I swear to God, I'll leave it after this. But when you talk about the Abu fight, is it that Whitmire was good, or is it that like somebody who really didn't know what they were doing tried to stand up, and then a decent grappler just took their back?
You know, right, well, that's what I'm saying. Is, you know, like that didn't tell us anything, right, winning, yeah, against, okay, Abu, but losing to Rebus really didn't tell us that much either in the context of what Whitmire probably is in the UFC. So, you know, I guess we're gonna find out a little bit more. But even still, like a win over Viana, I don't know if it tells us anything more.
Yeah. Well, Joe, before we move on, I put the comment up here. I'll put it back for 2 seconds. The people want me on MMA Radio, so
yeah, we're gonna have you on for sure, Chris.
Okay. All right. Just I just want to make sure you're listening to the people out there. That's all.
All right. Let's move on to Gerald Meerschaert, take 7,900 and plus 120, taking on Deron Wynn. 8,300 on DraftKings, minus 140. This one, don't really know what to make of this one either. This is besides Emmers, most of these prelim fights are a pretty tough call. Joe, do you think Wynn is gonna get back in the win column, or is Meerschaert gonna continue his underdog ways?
Well, here's the thing: there's some line value on Meerschaert, and he is a savvy veteran. He is what I like to call a lunch pail fighter. Guy who's bounced around the regional scene for a while, finally got his shot in the UFC. Kind of up and down career, but what he's really good at is exposing fighters who may not belong in the UFC, right? And here's a guy in Wynn, right? He had a couple of setup fights. Let's call a spade, right? I mean, Eric Spicely, come on. I mean, you know, He's a 5'6" middleweight who missed weight. Like, yeah. is that a dedication issue? Is that a training issue? I mean, anybody who is an accomplished wrestler, one thing they should know is how to cut weight. I mean, it's all about wrestling. I mean, you know, you've got to be able to cut weight. And you know, I would suspect that, you know, I don't want to cast judgments. I don't know what the cause of him missing weight was. Maybe he had a very legitimate reason, but it wasn't a good look on him. Hasn't been overly impressive in his last couple fights. With that said, in at least one of his fights, he put up some pretty good numbers from a DraftKings perspective. So what's
really, yeah, I mean, he hit Spicely with everything but the kitchen sink.
Yeah, exactly. And what I'll give props to where props are due, and it was on Dog or Pass. You know, because he's such a good chain wrestler, and because Meerschaert is likely smart enough to get up, you know, we could see a lot of points just by virtue of rinse and repeat takedowns. Now, you know, what effect that has on the judges, you know, I'm not sure, because Meerschaert is not a great defensive wrestler. And also, you know, Wynn has no neck, so it's going to be pretty hard to get submitted, at least by a rear naked choke. Maybe you could work an armbar or something, but it's hard to choke a guy out that doesn't have a neck. I guess I'm going to go with the line value in this fight. Wynn is an intriguing play in cash because I don't know that he's going to get finished, and he could get some rinse and repeat takedowns. I could certainly see this being like a split decision type of fight. I'm kind of torn. Give me Meerschaert. He's the savvy vet here.
Okay, Joe, you're going a little robot voice on us, and we lost your picture. So do you want to go out and come back, or?
How is it now?
I'm losing Mike too. Maybe it's me.
It's you, dude.
Is it me?
I'm getting robot voice from you.
From me or from Joe?
You're frozen.
Chris.
Okay, I'm gonna come back, guys. Give me
a second. Okay.
Yeah, let's just talk about Chris while he's gone.
Yeah, that guy.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know where he's getting that Jersey Primo stuff. I mean, he's building quite the little DraftKings team with low ownership.
Yep.
You know, Pollyanna Vienna. I mean, look, I'm not saying I'm confident in that fight. I don't see how anybody could be confident in that fight unless they know something, you know, which is entirely possible. I certainly don't, you know, so we'll see.
It is the kind of card that, like, there's not that many dogs and spots to pick that feel good.
There is some good line value, though. I mean, you know, there's like a couple of fighters at plus 125. I think close might be at one plus 115. So there's a couple of some line value. If you pull up the latest odds, here he is. He's back.
I'm back. How's this?
Little robot-y still.
Oh, really? Come on. All right. Forget about the.
For those of you that don't know, Chris lives in a part of New Jersey that is known for having a lot of radon issues. There's a toxic chemical that leaks up through the ground and could be affecting his lower level Wi-Fi. So it's very possible.
I don't really know what's causing this, guys. I apologize. If it gets really bad, I can restart the computer. How is it now?
You're still a little robot-y, but we got you. It's just your picture's freezing up.
Why don't I give my take on the fight, and we'll see where you're at then. Yeah, he's frozen.
Yeah, you're frozen, dude.
Mike, do me a favor and just vamp. I'm going to restart the computer. So
yep.
Give me a minute.
We'll talk this fight and the card and as a whole.
Technical difficulties, guys.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned close, but like, what's he going to give you on DraftKings, Joe? You know?
Not a lot. You're right. He's not. Even when he wins, he's not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have an angle that I'll save for the fight on Benny. One of the reasons I like Benny, and there's a reason, there's some narrative that I have on Benny, which I'm going to share, you know, relative to this fight in this camp. But you're right. I mean, if anybody's going to score, it's going to be Benny. However, if this goes to Benny typically doesn't lose decisions either. But let's say close kind of edges out a decision. He's not his known scorer, you know. Yeah. And even with Benny's chin, I mean, we're talking too much about this fight already. But even with Benny's chin, I don't see close as having power, you know. Yeah. So let's see. Chris is back.
I feel like this is good. Is this good?
It is good.
This is good.
Yeah. Okay. Thank God. Where are we now?
All right, we're still on Mearshart win. Joe is leaning Mearshart's way, a little bit of line value.
Oh yeah, I heard that.
And you know, you've got some disappointment from win. So give us your side of that, Chris.
Okay. Well, from what I heard from Joe, I don't know what he added. When I dipped out there. But from what I heard from Joe, I pretty much agreed with everything he said, but then he lacked his conviction on the pick. You gotta go for it, Joe. I am very solidly for Mearshart here because I think, look, obviously we know Wynn has wrestling chops. That's about all he has. He's never been able to hold an opponent down. He doesn't have good jiu-jitsu. That's what hurt him in the Darren Stewart fight. Now, to Joe's point of perhaps rinse and repeat takedowns from that, I would offer the Eric Spicely fight and say the last time we saw him against a really good jiu-jitsu guy, he didn't even want to take him down. So that could be the thing here too. And if that's the case, look, I'm not here to tell you Gerald Mearshart is a world-class striker. He's a much better striker than Eric Spicely is. We saw it in that... saw it in the Eric Anders fight. He's got, you know, a decent jab. He can throw his 1-2. He actually did a good job of evading and circling off and making sure he didn't get trapped in the fence in that Anders fight as well. The thing to look for here for Mearshart is, you know, he was fighting another southpaw last time in Anders. He's fighting an orthodox fighter here. That means that left kick that folded up Eric Spicely is going to be in play again. I mean, he almost folded Anders with it, even though, you know, it's harder to do against another southpaw at the end of that second round. So I think that there's one guy who is a much better striker here. And I also think that, look, if Deron Wynn wants to go to the ground, if he wants to take it down, let him. I mean, Gerald Mearshart, sometimes to his detriment, lives to work off his back and look for sweeps. And I don't think he'll have any problem doing that against somebody like Deron Wynn. Deron Wynn has some power throwing those big hooks. Could he connect and change the course of the fight? Sure. But I mean, we're literally talking about a guy in Mearshart who's been finished by strikes one time in 42 fights. And that was Thiago Santos. So, I mean, there's certainly no shame in that. Deron Wynn is certainly not Thiago Santos. And what you guys were talking about with the middleweight thing, I was shocked that he didn't, that he still refuses to move down. He's just going to be at the end of these ridiculous height and reach advantages the entire time. And for Mearshart here, I think it's six in height and seven in reach. And like I said, that jab is going to really be able to be put to use. So yeah, I'm going Mearshart here, and I actually like a lot of things about it.
Here's why I'm going the other way. You got Deron Winn averaging 9 takedowns per 15 minutes and Gerald Mearshart with a 46% takedown defense. To me, that just screams rinse and repeat, and Winn is going to take him down and do a little bit of work. Mearshart's going to get back up, and it's going to repeat, repeat, repeat. The striking doesn't worry me too much. I think Winn, he's at least capable on the feet. I think he likes his hands a little too much for a guy who is a wrestling, that's his strength. So, you know, hopefully he understands that this fight a little better. We'll know more when he gets on the scales, if he's going to be in a good place. I'm willing to give him a pass, even though he, like you said, he is 5'6" and missing weight there. I'm going to assume something went wrong in that cut, either, an injury or some kind of health issue that just, you know, botched it for him, but we'll find out tomorrow.
The only thing I'd say to that, I do agree he could take him down if he wanted to, but he could have taken down Eric Spicely if he wanted to too, and he didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'd be scared of Mearshart the way I would Spicely. Mm. Do you think they're on the same level as grapplers?
I think Spicely's probably a little better, but I think they're both pretty good.
Yeah, like I think Mearshart's an effective grappler in MMA, but like, you know, I would much rather face him in a grappling bout than Spicely.
No, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. But so yeah, give me Winn there, 8,300. It's a nice price for either guy if they can pull out a win. Yeah. Moving on here. Rodolfo Vieira, 9,300 on DraftKings, -600. Pretty big number there for Vieira. Taking on Saprobek Safarov at 6,900 and +450. This one doesn't need a ton of analysis, but Chris, give us your quick take on it.
Yeah, I was telling Mike before we started here, I have a confession to make. I've never done this before. I literally didn't look at any tape for this fight. I didn't feel like it was necessary. Look, Saprobek Safarov is a very stiff. I mean, he looks like he's in his 40s, but he's probably a little younger than that. Very stiff brawler. He's had leg problems in fights. He gets taken down very easily. Got subbed out by Tyson Pedro there. And Vieira is not just like a plodding jiu-jitsu guy. He's very athletic. He's very quick. He can at least throw a hammer or two. I mean, we say this sometimes and we get burned from it. Like the other week I said I didn't see how Alex Morono could lose to his newcomer guy. And, I ate my words there, so fair enough. This time, though, like, I've never said the words with more conviction that I don't see a way that Safarov wins this fight. I just don't see it. Like, this would be really shocking to me. I can't overstate that enough. I could sit here and say it for another minute, but I don't really have anything else to say. So I will just say Vieira by submission.
Yeah, and you made a good point when we were off air earlier that, you know, they gave him Pechota first, and that's a tougher fight than this. Maybe they think he needs to build a little bit, work on a couple things, and also get a fight out of the way for Safarov's contract, which has been the theme to the early UFC in 2020. Joe, any difference in opinion there?
No, I mean, it makes no sense from a matchmaking perspective. Pretty much agree with everything Chris said. Look, if you're going to max enter the $15 – have one lineup maybe with the dog here. I mean, it is MMA. I mean, maybe Vieira comes into this fight too loose. I don't know. I mean, I can't really legitimately come up with a way.
Well, here you go. Safarov grabs the fence and ends up on top of him manages to catch him.
You know, I wouldn't recommend this in most situations. He just goes out swinging and hopes he gets lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, because the fight does start standing. I mean, you know, that's really his only chance is like a quick like flash knockout. But in any case, I think we talked enough about this fight. We can move on.
Yeah.
All right, this is an interesting one for me next. We got Mark Madsen, 9K even on DraftKings, minus 230, taking on Austin Hubbard, 7,200, and plus 190. I think Madsen's ownership is going to be through the roof, and for good reason. But I think people are not giving Hubbard enough credit. He's not an amazing fighter at this point, but he's well-rounded, and he's paid his dues. So which way are you leaning here, Joe?
Yeah, well, I took some heat because I posted a dog parlay up on earlier in the week, and I took some heat because I played where I thought there was some perceived line value, Austin Hubbard. I believe it was Austin Hubbard, Dracar Close, and Gerald Meerschaert, and it essentially paid 12-1. And it's funny because the most shit I took was over the Hubbard pick. And I'm like, look, I get it. You know, Madsen is an athletic, you know, freak. He's 35 years old. He's an accomplished wrestler. Apparently, all his tests were through the roof. But let's be real here. I mean, he has been a can crusher, both overseas and, you know, his first fight in the UFC. Hubbard at least trains at a good camp in Elevation. He's got teammates here. You know, he is a more complete mixed martial artist. Does that mean I think Madsen can't win the fight? No, obviously. You know, he's a takedown machine. If he's smart, he'll run right, look to grab some underhooks and take the fight right to the ground. Now, is he skilled enough to put Hubbard away? I don't know. I mean, this could be a decision. You know, the hope here is if you're playing Madsen that you get a bunch of takedown points and grappling points, because I don't think you're going to see a lot of striking points. But is it the silliest thing in the world to think that Hubbard might be live? You know, at his price point on DraftKings, no. I'm going to – look, even though I played him in a parlay, I think I'm going to go ahead and pick Madsen just to win the fight because it's a very winnable fight for him. But with that said, I don't think it's as much as a lock as Vieira. I think Hubbard's got, you know, a legitimate chance to do something here. But I guess give me Madsen.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, I wouldn't go as far as picking Hubbard outright, but definitely want some shares. And the thing that scares me on Madsen is he's a straightforward wrestler. You know, he's on rails when he's in there. A good striker is going to catch him on the way in. You watch some of his early fights. He does take some damage. You know, he's bleeding at points. You know, so his striking is basically to threaten a heavy overhand right and then go to the wrestling off of it. And it's effective so far, but it's going to catch up to him. And Hubbard's kind of the guy that is a good measuring stick for that and could make him pay some, you know, catch a knee or an uppercut on the way in with his head down. And we've got trouble. And don't forget, you know, Hubbard against Davi Hamosh spoiled a lot of people's DraftKings night because he was just, you know, he wasn't going to win the fight, but he was just too tough of an out for Hamosh to dominate. So where do you fall on this, Chris?
Yeah, well, I think that we all three agree on a portion of this, and that sort of a feeling about Madsen that the other shoe is about to drop at some point. Just because, look, I agree with a lot of what you said, Mike. I've never seen him, and I watch all the regional tape I could find, and I watch his UFC debut. It's basically just one or two shots to get into the clinch, and then the clinch. Like, I don't know that he has any kind of striking game whatsoever. It doesn't really look like it exists. He can throw a big overhand, and that's it. And I don't think he's comfortable being out in space for like 30 consecutive seconds. It's going to be interesting to see, like, because Hubbard's an agile guy, moves around a lot. It's going to be interesting to see if he can't push Hubbard back right away. It's going to be really interesting to see what he does when he's in space, because I got to be honest, we just don't even know if he can survive there for an extended period of time. Having said all of that, I think that Hubbard gets hit so much that he might just walk into one of those big overhands and be led to the grappling. So I guess I'm slightly leaning Madsen just because I think that Hubbard's a little too hittable and a little too prone to be backed up into the fence. Like, he does move around a lot, as I said, but in the Propylex fight, he was on the back foot a lot. If he gets on the back foot here, I think the pressure battle is going to be, for that matter, I think the first person who decides, okay, I'll try to push Madsen back, it's going to be interesting to see how he responds. I guess with all that said, I'm going to pick Madsen ever so slightly, but I think, man, I think he's got all the makings of a guy who's just waiting to blow up your DraftKings lineup into smithereens. So I would say, take Madsen. I would say have a little bit of Hubbard, because look, as Joe said, as Mike said, Madsen's never been tested. It's not clear to me he has an MMA game that's not wrestling. So Hubbard has to be live. But as for the pick, I'm going Madsen.
So if you're counting at home, that's three lukewarm picks on Madsen and some interest on Hubbard. All right, let's move on to Sean O'Malley making his return, minus 380, 9,100 on DraftKings. And you got Jose Quinones, his opponent, plus 315 and 7,100 on DraftKings. My big concern here would probably be that Quinones tends to stifle his opponent's offense a little bit. Now, his opponents haven't been that good. But, you know, he's happy to grab a hold of people to wrestle a little bit. And, you know, O'Malley has that style that could probably transcend that. But I've got a little bit of pause. Chris, are you all in on O'Malley, or is it a similar situation to the last fight we talked about?
I mean, well, it's not that stark. But I did think that when I saw it, I was like, okay, I'm just picking Sean O'Malley, and that's going to be the end of it. We look into it. It is interesting because they kind of – I'm not going to say that Quinones is as good of a mover or, you know, using his fluidity as O'Malley is, but they both like doing that. And as you said, Quinones does have the wrestling. The reason why I don't love Quinones in this matchup is because I don't think he's going to pressure – as aggressively as he needs to. We saw in the Trevin Giles fight, and we didn't really see it in the Sukumtop fight because he doesn't pressure either, but we saw in the Trevin Giles fight, we saw O'Malley slow down when he was getting pressured and he had to use a lot of energy just to, you know, get out of those situations. I think Quinones can use his wrestling. He can bounce on his toes and get some stuff done, but I don't know if he wants to play a kicking game with Sean O'Malley, which I think is what this fight might become. And I just think that if it's two guys standing in space, like Quinones might have his moments, but I just don't see him beating Sean O'Malley there. So it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm excited to see it, but I'm taking Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, less interested in Quinones to win, more from a spoil your lineup again here. Joe, yeah. Where are you falling?
Yeah, I think you called it, Mike. I mean, you know, if you look at Quinones' record, you're like, wow, he's got a pretty good record in the UFC. how many of his opponents are still in the UFC? You know, he actually has done really good beating up some pretty mediocre fighters and actually has scored fairly well doing it, which is kind of cool. Aside from that, you know, look, O'Malley is coming off of a layoff. USADA. He has participated in a few grappling competitions. He does train at a decent camp. You know, I'm curious to see his comeback. Would it surprise me if he was a little stiff? No. I like him to get the job here. I think this will be a good test. You know, Quinones, despite, you know, kind of crushing cans, you know, is a good first step back for Sean O'Malley. I'm going to pick Sean O'Malley to win here. But I understand if someone wants to play a few Quinones lineups just in case Sean O'Malley's not back, you know, that's fine. But I think Sean O'Malley should get this win. I think the UFC wants him to get this win. You know, he's a popular fighter. He's got a good following. So give me Sean O'Malley here.
Yeah, I agree fully there. It's a nice measuring stick to see where he's at after the layoff. And I think we'll know pretty quick if this is going to be Sean O'Malley's night or not. So give me Sean O'Malley as well. But another spot that you're going to have to, you know, hope that the fight goes smoothly for the favorite there. All right, we got Alex Cowboy Oliveira, 8,400 on DraftKings. And minus 140, taking on Max Griffin, 7,800, plus 120. Yeah, you know, Max Griffin just has a tendency to spoil his opponent's night, you know, whether it be with some surprising wrestling or just the crisper boxing. And, you know, Cowboy Kepa's got some defensive deficiencies, that's for sure. You know, his offense is amazing, but you know, I'm not sure I want to take the plunge on Cowboy. Where are you at on this, Joe? Are you signing off on Oliveira, or is this a stay away?
Well, you know, this is interesting because Cowboy has really got his back up against the wall here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, after starting out like gangbusters in the UFC, now he's got some losses. He could very well see himself getting cut. Maybe not, because he is kind of an exciting fighter and he does have a fan following, and you know, I think the UFC likes him. But you know, this guy has got, you know, a lot of kids to support. He's a well-known polygamist. You know, just kidding. You know, but he, I don't know what to do here. I mean, a few years ago, I would say, give me all the Cowboy. I know there's some love on Twitter for Cowboy here. Max Griffin is not going to score well. You know, he could sort of wear Cowboy down and kind of squeak out a decision. I'm going to take Cowboy here. I'll have a few shares of Griffin, but I think Griffin might have the safer floor and Cowboy has the higher ceiling. If you want to look at the fight that way, that might be a great way to look at it. I'll have both sides, but for GPPs, I'll be higher weighted towards Cowboy.
Yeah, that's exactly how I'm looking at it. I want to mix in some Cowboy in the GPP pool, and not much more than that, because yeah, he does have that. He could make things crazy in round one and end up with that finish. Chris, do you agree, or is it Max Griffin?
Well, I agree that you need to have shares of Cowboy and GPPs, of course. But this was actually a pick I made in my betting article as well. I'm taking Max Griffin here. Look, Cowboy Oliveira, over his last three fights in particular, it just seems like anybody who can stay composed in that first 5 minutes has a real chance to beat him, particularly if he can't get his wrestling going. And Max Griffin has a good, solid kickboxing base. His takedown defenses and all that fantastic, but most of that is the Colby Covington fight. He's been taken down twice in his next seven fights, so I think that's a little misleading. I also think, you know, he has his own wrestling game that he can use here, and Cowboy Oliveira can be taken down as well. So I think that the idea that he's going to just fight a more technical fighter, look, obviously Oliveira can spark him out, and that's why I say, and I think everybody says, not just here, but I mean like across the DK universe, that you need to have him in your GPPs. But I think that Max Griffin is a guy who is pretty hard to hurt. Again, is a composed fighter in there, has a good fundamental kickboxing game, nice wrestling game. I just think he's the better put together fighter, and if he can outlast that initial burst, and I'm betting that he can, I think he takes us down as Oliveira starts to tire and Max Griffin gets his pressuring game going. So I am I'm taking Max Griffin here.
You know, I really like that Griffin, his wrestling has come along like that. You know, it's not easy to get to that level, but you know, he learned and experienced what wrestling can do to your opponent firsthand on the wrong end of it. So,
yeah,
he's a tough fighter to beat, but I'll take Cowboy here as well. You know, but not with much conviction. All right, moving on to this fight. Interesting one. Neil Magny, 7,600 on DraftKings, plus 155. Taking on Li Jinglang, 8,600, minus 175. I think that line is a little wider than I would have anticipated. I feel like people were excited for Magny to take on Vicente Luque. And Li is not anywhere near the striker Luque is. So, you know, I guess I don't get that. The spread here, but Chris, where do you fall on these two guys?
Yeah, this is a tough one for me. I have to try to not let my bias come into play, because I think Neil Magny is like one of the most overrated fighters possibly ever, at least in the last 5 or 10 years. I just don't know exactly what he does well. I mean, people like him because he's athletic and he has length, and I get it, but I just don't really see him putting that to use all that much. On the flip side, Li Jinglang, I think he's still a big bruising brawler, and I wouldn't tell you otherwise. But I do see signs that he's He's coming along. He's integrated a couple, some more leg kicks, some more jabs. Now he's going to have to work his way on the inside here, and that's going to be the reason where you look and say, okay, maybe Matt Magny's worth the play. I just see Li Jinglong ultimately smothering him with pressure and getting him out of there with a hard shot. I just don't think that Magny is going to deal well with the pace or pressure that Long puts out there. And I think it's going to result in a knockout. But I must disclose my bias as a notorious Neil Magny hater. But be that as it may, I still think my read is right on this one. I don't think Magny is worthless in this fight. I do think the range counts for something. But ultimately, I'm taking Lee here.
Joe, which way do you go?
Wow. Okay. So interesting here. You know, first of all, there's some narrative surrounding, you know, Lee as a Chinese fighter fighting outside of China. If you look at his last six fights, three were in China, two were in Singapore, and one was in Australia. You know, he lost the fight in Australia to Jake Matthews. He hasn't fought outside of that area since his Ultimate Fighter. He did have one fight in the U.S., Ultimate Fighter finale in 2016. You know, he did surprise everybody, you know, and it seems like these Chinese fighters really feed off the crowd more so than any other fighters in terms of having a home field advantage, so to speak. You know, that was kind of a surprise against Oleski. I mean, I don't think a lot of people expected that, knew he had power. But, you know, Oleski was one of those guys that was poised, you know, to kind of, you know, be in the hunt, you know. So it was an interesting outcome. You know, fast forward here, Magny is coming off of a layoff after taking a hellacious beating from Santiago Pazanivio. You know, Magny prior to that has been very active. I mean, we all know the attributes. I mean, the incredible reach, you know, the height, the fact that Lee is not really that much of a wrestler here. If I was sure that Magny had enough strength to keep Lee at bay, I could see him certainly squeaking out a decision. He does probably have better cardio. He trains at elevation. I would really love to say I'm going to take Magny as a dog play here. I'm going to have to go with Li Jing just because of, you know, the fact that he's been a more active fighter. Chinese narrative aside, you know, he does have the ability to put a hurting on Magny, especially if he starts using those kicks that were mentioned. So give me Lee here. I do think Magny is a live enough dog that you should have shares of him in GPPs.
The chin issues are definitely a real thing for Magny after that that fight against Ponzinibbio. You know, I think Lee is getting too much credit for beating Zaleski in China, though. Zaleski is a fighter that's willing to mix it up at all times, and it was just not his night. Add in that, you know, he traveled halfway around the world in a strange country to him. So I actually had a good bit of both Zhang and Zhi Ling on that card in China that worked out really nicely for some lineups. But yeah, close fight. The wrestling is going to dictate a lot here. And I do like that you brought up, Joe, it's a fight outside of the Asian area. So we're going to see if he's been getting some favors done, I guess. But give me Magny. He's one of the only dogs I like on the card. But all right. So now we're moving on to Benil Dariush, 8,700 on DraftKings, -160, taking on Dracar Cloche, 7,500 on DraftKings, +140. We touched on this a little bit, you and I, Joe, while Chris was off air. You got Dariush with the chin issues, but Cloche just isn't a guy that seems like the ideal person to take advantage of that. You know, he's not a high pace fighter, doesn't seem to have much power. Which way are you going to go, though, on your pick?
Well, one of the other things to consider, okay, here's some narrative. Benny was married, you know, within the last 2 months. So, you know, there was a time when I would have said that, you know, Benny was poised, you know, for a title shot. You know, he unfortunately has either developed some chin issues or My understanding is he tends to get distracted when he's got other things going on. You know, that Chiesa fight was not a good look on him. He did beat Hooker. I'm sorry. He did beat, what's his name? The Texecutioner. You know, he did beat him. You know, he came back against Drew Dober after Drew Dober, like, was lighting him up standing. Yeah. You know, that was kind of an interesting fight there. If I thought Close had any pop in his hands at all, I would be a lot more likely to take the line value here and take Close. But, you know, Close has been a decisionator, and he doesn't put up a lot of points. He's not been a good DraftKings fighter. Benny typically does not lose decisions. So I could certainly see this fight, if Benny can't get a finish, going to decision. And I just don't see Close as having the power to finish Benny. He doesn't seem to have that pop in his hands. So, unfortunately, you know, where does that leave us? You know, we take a flyer with Benny at, what, 8.7K to catch Close in a sub, you know, or get one of these grindy decisions. I don't know that this fight, if it goes to decision, is going to score at all from a DraftKings perspective. So there is line value in Close. I think he's going to be fairly popular as a dog, but I guess give me Benny here for the win.
Yeah, I'm totally on Benny. You look at Close's last two fights against Christos Giagos. You know, Giagos gassed, which is what Giagos does, but looked pretty decent up to that point in the second round there. And then I think he lost to Bobby Green. You know, you look at the stats from that fight. I don't know how you say Bobby Green lost when he put up so many more strikes and had a takedown where Close had none. So, I mean, if he's coming into this fight on an 0-2 skid, as it could be, you know, I would have no interest in him at all. I know MMA math is definitely not bulletproof, but give me Dariush and I think inside the distance. Chris, you disagree on that at all?
No, I'm taking Benny here as well. I think that look, I'm somebody who's guilty of hyping up Jakar Close, I think, a little more than we've seen, which sounds weird because he's got like what, one loss in the organization, but I thought he was going to be much more of a finisher coming out of the MMA lab on the regional scene, and it just hasn't happened for him. He did end up putting up 96 in that last win, so you know, maybe better things ahead. But like you said, that was a product of Giagos gassing. And the other thing I would bring up is that Giagos was on his back in the second round with an arm under his chin. It looked very likely that he was going to get finished. It didn't happen.
Yep.
I think that Dariush has recently said, okay, forget this. I am going back to my wrestling and my grappling. We've seen it in his last three fights. It's all gone well for him when he's done it. I believe he got subs in all three, or maybe one was a decision. But in either case, he's been really successful with it going forward. Yeah.
Decision, sub.
Right. Okay. So I think, look, if I didn't see, because Jakar Close is, you know, he's a strong guy in the clinch. I mean, it wasn't immediately obvious to me that Giagos was going to be able to take him down. But now that I've seen that, and I've seen that Giagos was able to get on his back and almost finish him, and I know what a relentless grappler Dariush can be, especially in this recent arc of his career, then yeah, I have to go with Dariush, especially when you talk about how non-lethal Jakar is, which we have. So, I mean, I think even if Benny gets hit a little bit, look, we saw him have to take a little damage from Drew Dober, who has turned himself into an absolute powerhouse, and he was able to withstand that storm and get to him. So I think that a similar thing happens here, and I have to take Dariush by sub.
Yeah, and Close has given up a takedown in five of his six UFC fights and to the likes of Bobby Green. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think Dariush is probably a better wrestler than anyone he's faced. Yeah, maybe Giagos, but he's obviously got his own issues with the gas tank. So yeah, give me Dariush for sure.
By the way, Dariush by sub is at DraftKings Sportsbook +235.
Wow. Yeah, that seems crazy.
That seems pretty sweet to me. Yeah.
Especially when we just saw somebody on this guy's back trying to choke him. I mean, you know. But you know, get that in, guys, if you're looking for it.
Yeah, well, we'll do. All right, we're coming to the title fights on this pay-per-view card. We've got Zhang Weili, 8,900 -170, taking on Joanna and Jacek, 7,300 +150. Not often do we get Joanna at the low sevens. Chris, do you think it's going to be the Chinese product retaining her belt, or is Joanna going to reclaim that belt?
You know, it's tough because I watch Weili Zhang and I think, like, yeah, she's a good kickboxer, but Joanna is going to be faster here. And so if the fight plays out in the middle of the cage, I think she gets the win. I think she's too dynamic of a striker. She's too fast. Technique is too sharp. She would beat Weili Zhang there. But what we have to consider now, and this is something I totally missed in the Shevchenko fight, I thought, oh, no way. I mean, the weight's not going to make that much of a difference. She's not going to be able to take her down that easily. She took her down whenever she wanted. And Zhang might be stronger than Shevchenko. I mean, that's just a projection on my part, but she looks
entirely possible.
So it very well could be. And so if, like, we were all just so used to Joanna coming into a fight with these wrestlers, especially the Andrade fight, where it's like, yeah, but she's not going to get taken down. And she didn't get taken down there. And so, you know, that was a prevailing narrative that, at least for me, just got absolutely shattered in that Shevchenko fight. And so, look, I can't trust that this is going to play out entirely on the feet. If I could, I would pick Jan Jacek in a landslide. I can't do it. I think that I still think that she's going to win just based on the things that I said before, but I think it's way closer. I also think that Zhang is a sneaky counterpuncher, or can be. She obviously has a lot of power. But yeah, give me Jan Jacek, just because, for better or worse, even if the fight doesn't go her way, Jan Jacek's hard to finish, and who knows if Zhang will be able to rinse and repeat those takedowns in the same way that Shevchenko did. So give me Joanna, but a close and interesting fight, I think.
All right, Joe, give us your take, and let me know what you think about Dana White coming out and saying, you know, look at Joanna's Instagram, and she's hanging out at the beach and living the life. And then you look at Zhang's Instagram, and all she does is train and get better and stronger. And, you know, you kind of got a little bit of a, you know, Joanna's on her way out and Zhang's on her way up thing going here.
Yeah, I mean, look, and also Joanna seemingly has been a different fighter since she got a little top heavy, let's put it. You know,
just carrying around a few extra ounces. That's not making weight cuts easier.
There to you know, to make the weight cut even harder, to 115. I'm curious to see how she looks on the scales tomorrow. Zhang has been in Vegas for, I believe, 8 weeks. She took a circuitous route to get there. You know, like having to go through Thailand and I think Dubai, and you know, she, you know, made it, and she's been training. And you know, I think she's the hungrier fighter. I think she has more aggression. I mean, you know, Joanna was a great champion, but let's be honest. I mean, you know, she was hit by Claudia Gadelha. She was hit by KK. You know, she had a war against Andrade. Yeah, she won those fights, but she was also finished by Rose Namajunas and then lost a really close decision the second time. I'm going to pick Zhang here. I think, look, Joanna in Vegas, I think she's going to put up a good fight. But I do like Weili Zhang here. I think this is probably a stackable fight in cash. You know, I could see a lot of significant strikes being thrown. And what's really interesting about Weili Zhang is she actually tends to get stronger as the fight goes on. I mean, I think in the third round in one of her fights, she landed 61 significant strikes in the third round. Like, so I don't see them gassing, and I would love nothing more than to see this fight, you know, see each fighter land, you know, 150 significant strikes. It would be a great fight for DK. So give me Weili Zhang here, maybe by finish, definitely by decision.
What do you think the ownership on Zhang is going to look like, Joe?
I think the ownership on JJ may actually be higher just because of where Weili is positioned. At 8.9K, you know,
that's kind of my lean with the pricing
up there. There's not nearly as many options at Ioannis price point.
Yeah, I would love to stack this, but with the weight cut to 115, you know, we saw her make it last time, but there was the whole thing against Waterston where she asked for a catch weight, you know, a couple days before weigh-ins, and
yep.
You know, then she said, oh, it's no problem. I'm going to make it. And she did, to be fair.
She won that fight, but Waterston had her moments in that fight.
And Waterston's not that dangerous, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with Zhang, the narrative on her coming into the Andrade fight was, you know, we've never seen her fight anybody this good. And I feel like that's kind of replaying this week where people think, oh, you know, she hasn't fought Joanna's caliber yet because there's not many fighters. There's a couple fighters on her level in the division or even all of women's MMA. So I think that's lending to Zhang maybe being a decent ownership number. And you know, she's such a bully for Joanna. Her best defense, in my opinion, is her offense. She's always going forward. She's always hitting you. You can't get your offense off because you're getting punched and kicked at a pace you've never experienced. That didn't bother Rose Namajunas, and I think that's why Rose was able to knock her out. Well, that and the weight cut probably did her durability no favors there, because you know she got stunned twice in the first round. And then, you know, I can see Zhang doing that. She's not going to be bothered by getting hit, by getting peppered. She's going to put her head down and come forward. And you know, barring a knockout, I don't think that's good for Joanna. If you've got a very strong wrestling based fighter who's a hard hitter coming after you in that fashion. So I'll take Zhang here. Just to round that up, Chris, did you take Joanna?
I took Joanna, yeah. But I should note here that we're getting a lesson in the pronunciations here. It's actually the surname comes first, so it's Zhang Weili. So just so you guys know that.
Yeah, Chinese fighters, that's the way to do it. I throw out the easier name more often.
Oh yeah, no, I know. We are stuck in our Western ways, but I'm just saying that it was becoming a sort of a discussion in chat. So there you go. Everybody knows.
If I didn't introduce her as that, I apologize. The Chinese pronunciation would be Zhang Weili.
Yes.
And then Joe, you're taking her as well, Zhang. Oh, Joe, did I lose you?
Joe.
Nope. Oh. I'm here. Yes. I put my thumbs up. So yeah.
Okay.
Up.
All right.
Yeah, I'm taking her.
All right. And then moving on to the second title fight, we've got Israel Adesanya, 9,200 on DraftKings, -280, taking on Yoel Romero, 7K, +240 in our main event. We're getting another double title fight here. So a treat. Joe, you want to lead off with this one? Does Romero make things crazy and do his thing? Or is it Adesanya just too fast, too long, too hard to hit?
Well, let me put a disclaimer on this. I have faded Adesanya in every fight absent Rob Wilkerson and Anderson Silva.
So, how's that worked out for you, Joe?
Yeah, so I am not going to start backing him now. I am going to pick Yoel Romero by finish because he tends not to win decisions despite the fact that he deserves to win them. Bad judging cost me money in the past. Just a little bit of bitterness there in backing Yoel Romero. He's been a good DraftKings play, even in his losses. You know, I hope he makes weight. I hope there's no issue with weight. I want to see him have a legitimate shot at winning a title here. I can't imagine, even the freaking nature that he is, that he's going to get too many more fights. So give me Yoel Romero here, and give me Yoel Romero by knockout.
Yeah, unless things go really wrong in the division, if he doesn't win here, you can't see him getting another title fight. Chris, where are you landing on these guys?
Well, can I first say that you know, there's a lot of hand wringing about, like, should Yoel Romero get Yoel Romero could win lose 40 fights in a row, and I would watch him in a title fight. He's just, I love watching the guy fight. He's an incredible athlete. I just like the things he, like, I always go back to, like, in the Chris Weidman fight, there was that little trip that he did and then circle right around to the back. And he was like 40 when he did that. There are people half his age who could never do it. So yeah. I will always watch Yoel Romero fight. I'm also picking him here. It's not with a lot of confidence, but the problem is that, like, Okay, so in that second Robert Whittaker fight, right? It was a very bizarre strategy that ended up paying some dividends. He didn't win, although you can make an argument he did, where he basically took the entire first round off. Like, yeah. He just didn't do anything for the first round. And we were wondering what was going on. He turned it on later. I don't think you can afford to do that with a guy like Adesanya. I think that the kicks are too devastating. He's got too much of a varied array of offense. So I hope Romero starts a little faster. The reason I'm ultimately picking him, and again, it was flip-flopping. Of course, the wrestling is going to play a factor, but you know, with Romero, you don't really know how heavy he's going to be there, or even if you want him to be that heavy, because we have seen him gas before using wrestling in the first Whittaker fight. But my thing here is that he sort of has that tall man matrixy defense, right, where he just tries to lean out of the way of stuff. I don't think – like, look, Romero is the most explosive, quickest guy he's ever fought by far. I don't think that kind of defense is going to pay dividends when you're fighting a guy like Yoel Romero. I think like all those shots where in that second Robert Whittaker fight where he was literally coming like a hair inch into being hit by the punches, but just slipping those punches, I think Yoel Romero is going to hit you with those punches. I don't think you slip them. So I think what's ultimately going to happen here, look, I think Adesanya is going to have his success, his moments of success. I think that he plays too much of a dangerous game with the defense. I think that a guy as explosive and powerful as Romero is just going to make him pay for it. So give me Romero by finish.
Yeah, that's definitely a fear that I have in this fight. I'm going to pick Adesanya, but, you know, I expect him to probably just pick at Romero for two or three rounds and then start to get a little cute as he tends to do. He's you know, he's a showy guy. He wants it to be flashy. He wants people to be entertained. And Romero is the most dangerous guy to do that against in all of MMA, probably. The one interesting thing, there hasn't been much narrative around the wrestling here. Pretty much every fight that Adesanya's had in MMA and the UFC, people have said, yeah, but he can't defend a takedown. And now he's facing, you know, an Olympic caliber wrestler who just ignores his wrestling for whatever reason. And I think that's probably the case here too. I don't expect Romero to go after many takedowns. He's going to stand and bang, but I think this fight 8 or 9, 10 times out of 10, it's probably going to go Adesanya's way, but you know, there's that one or two, or maybe even three times that Romero pulls off the crazy KO, and takes his head clean off somehow. Give me Adesanya. It's not a great stack in cash because, you mentioned that the last couple times he scored well in losses, Joe. But that's not always the case. He could definitely be lacking in the significant strikes department.
I think Adesanya is the worst part of that stack, actually.
Do you?
Unless he gets the finish.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him not racking up some volume on Romero, who's, you know, probably just going to be happy to get hit for a while, you know, the way he was in the Costa fight. Like, he did not care that Paulo Costa, who's one of the hardest hitters in the division, just unloaded on him. You know, he just sat there and ate it to return his fire.
Do you guys think that Romero will once again try to say, hey, look over there, in order for Adesanya to get distracted and land some shots?
Well, nothing would surprise me.
We're not talking about, you know, Adesanya's staph infection either now.
That's true. Yeah.
He's pulling it down, right?
He says he doesn't have one.
Well, he has one, that's for sure. It's
we'll find out at the weigh-ins.
He has malaria 8 times, so what is a staph infection going to do? You know, it could wear him out as the rounds get long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say about that is that, Romero is one of those guys, he doesn't really push a pace per se. He sort of waits and explodes. So I think that Adesanya is going to be controlling the pace most of the time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's going to dictate the fight and Romero is going to pick his spots to be explosive.
Yeah.
All right, should we get to some hot takes?
Let's do it.
Chris, you want to lead us off? Do you have one ready to go?
Do I have one ready to go? Well, I picked like 100 dogs. I should have one. Yeah, Chikidze gets a finish. Gets a knockout of Evers there.
That's pretty tasty.
Yeah.
Joe, you got something on tap?
I do. Yeah, I got a parlay for you guys. I got Benny by sub plus 235. This is an actual bet that I just made while we were doing this podcast legally in the state of New Jersey.
All right.
I got Benny plus sub by 235, and I got Yoel Romero to win in round four. That's plus 2,000, 20 to 1. That parlay for a $14.42 bet, you will win $1,000 with that parlay. So you got Benny by sub plus 235, and you got 20 to 1 on Yoel Romero to win in round four. That $14.42, take a nice tidy profit of $1,000, and you guys
can spend the money
next time we have a show.
Yeah.
Lock it in. You can spend the money.
Yeah. Chat, if you guys have, come on, let's get them in there. I don't see any. What's going on?
Come on, man. Give us a hot take,
if
man.
If you got them, Chris will read them. I'm going to resist the urge to...
Not only will I read them, I'll put them up here. That you have my word. Come on,
where's
guys.
John Church? Is he in today? Come on.
I didn't see him here, but...
Mo Scream. Come on, Mo Scream. Let's give us a little hot take here, dude.
Well, we're not leaving till somebody gives us a hot take. We can't have zero hot takes. Okay, here we go. Talk Jay Bay says no Adesanya in the winning GPP lineup this week.
I can see that.
I'll take that. Yeah,
that's a hot take.
You know, anybody in a five rounder, that's pretty hot.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, I would say Duran win inside the distance. I think maybe by ground and pound.
Wow, that's a hot take.
That's wow. That's a wow for me. That one gets a wow. Well, you're getting into the spirit of it, which we like. Okay.
Oh, we're noticed by John second Tiller. Round KO.
Huh. Ooh.
Oh, John Tiller.
That would be surprising,
take,
for sure.
See, this is what even if we don't have too many, we're getting really hot ones. So, well, I'll take that trade off. I like it.
And I think Sean's hot take is that he texted me before. I think Sean's hot take is that you know, he will win more money in tennis than he will in NBA in MMA.
Yeah,
that's Sean's hot take. Yes.
All right, for Chris and Joe, thanks for watching, guys. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, do all that good stuff wherever you listen to podcasts or watch this live stream. It goes a long way on the back end.
Quick shout out for you know, MMA Fan Radio. You know, we're doing a lot of good things. We're going to have these guys come on as guests at some point. We had some fun playing, you know, MMA Jeopardy, which was kind of fun. And we did this game, which, you know, proved to me that none of my co-hosts really understand breast sizes and centimeters. So that was a good time. So tune in for that. We're going to, you know, I'm going to try to actually do some producing myself, although, you know, Dan and Kyle and Brett have been doing the heavy lifting. So I just need to carve some time out. A new day job has been kicking my butt. So I'm going to look to do some fun stuff. Tell some gambling stories. It'll be good having these guys on. Thanks again to RotoWire for hosting us here. And, you know, let's make some money. I mean, we were able to get the main contest boosted up from 30 to 50 due to a little bit of complaining.
But props to Joe on that one. You know, you got on that right away, and you know, we need a better contest. And
because they already set the contest, it's only $15. If you guys remember, a lot of times they juice up the buy-in. So, you know, let's make some money. Let's take down a piece of this 200K or 300K.
Hopefully one of us sitting here
that'll be nice.
Is in that first place seat.
Or in the chat, let's say.
Yeah,
or in the chat. Our chatters. We want them to do well too.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks for being here, Mike.
You got it.
Peace.
Thanks. Peace.